presentation of Idaho Reports on Idaho Public Television is made possible through the generous support of the Laura Moore Cunningham Foundation, committed to fulfilling the Moore and Bettis family legacy of building the great state of Idaho, by the Friends of Idaho Public Television, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Idaho was in the national spotlight this week during oral arguments on whether Idaho's abortion ban conflicts with federal law. We get two takes on the hearing from Senate Minority Leader Melissa Wintrow and Attorney General Raul Labrador. I'm Melissa Davlin. Idaho Reports starts now. Hello and welcome to Idaho Reports. This week, Division of Financial Management Administrator Alex Adams joins me to discuss how budgeting issues at vocational rehab could affect clients and how the legislative session went for Governor Brad Little. Senate Minority Leader Melissa Wintrow shares her view on the oral arguments before the U.S. Supreme Court on Idaho's abortion ban and whether it conflicts with federal law. Then Attorney General Raul Labrador gives his take on how the hearing went. But first, Dan Chadwick passed away earlier this week. Dan was the longtime executive director for the Idaho Association of Counties, where he worked for 27 years. He also served as deputy attorney general and division chief for Attorney General Jim Jones. Dan was a friend of the show and a friend of mine, and a mentor to lawmakers and Idaho politicos alike. Everyone at Idaho Reports sends our condolences to his family and loved ones, and I know I'm going to miss his wisdom and wit. On Tuesday, the Idaho Division of Vocational Rehab told the Idaho State Rehabilitation Council that it may need to implement wait lists for future clients should they run short of funds during this fiscal year or the next. The division made news earlier this month when it notified the legislature's budget committee that it may run out of funds before the end of the fiscal year and that it couldn't pinpoint how the accounting error occurred or how big the problem was. During Tuesday's meeting, Division Director Jane Donnellan told the council that the problem began in 2021 when Voc Rehab began paying bills from one fiscal year with future fiscal year appropriations, which compounded the accounting issues over time. In addition to wait lists, the division may need to prioritize services for clients with the most significant disabilities. Producer Ruth Brown has more on our website. You'll find the link at idahoreports.org. On Thursday, Alex Adams, administrator for the Division of Financial Management, joined me to discuss the Voc Rehab budgeting issues, as well as how the rest of the legislative session went for Governor Brad Little. Alex, thanks so much for joining us. Has the division spoken to the governor's office about their concerns that it may have to potentially put clients on wait lists?
Well, so when this issue first surfaced, it was prior to the end of legislative session, and the division did reach out to myself and to the governor's office and flagged their concerns. It was through those discussions that we worked with the division to bring a supplemental request to JFAC. And our message was essentially, let us look under the hood, let us figure out what the problems are, but let's not put the clients that the division serves at risk. It was our sincere hope that the clients and the services would continue. That said, at the time, the governor did request an audit, and the scope of that is being defined and the contract is being finalized. In the meantime, though, we brought in a former state financial officer and had him go over to the division, work with their finance team and leadership team, and try to identify what's going on.
So it was your sincere hope that clients ultimately wouldn't be affected by these budgeting issues. It looks like that might ultimately end up being the case if potential future clients have to go on wait lists. Is there currently a backup plan for other commissions or councils like the State Independent Living Council that are affected by this, that receive their funding routed through vocational rehab?
So there's very limited access to funds outside of legislative appropriations for pretty important reasons. So I think a lot of it's going to come down to the division having to minimize their expenses, minimize costs, and prioritize focusing on clients and their partner agencies.
Has the governor's office been a part of any of those conversations with the partner agencies like Silk?
I don't know the answer to that directly. Most of my conversations have been with the division. The division did flag the issue with the partner agencies prior to the adjournment of the legislative session, so it was a known issue.
this came out this week that this issue started years ago when the division was paying bills from other fiscal years. You know, so using fiscal year 24 appropriation to pay bills from fiscal year 23, the issue compounded over those years. Is your office sure that no other departments or divisions are doing the same thing, paying bills from one fiscal year with another fiscal year's appropriation?
Well, you see it from time to time. I mean, occasionally Medicaid has to hold a bill across fiscal years is probably the most prominent example I've seen. And I remember a time in recent years when a sitting lieutenant governor was careening to overspending her budget, and certain decisions had to get held, for example. So it happens. I think by and large, though, we have a fiscally conservative cabinet, fiscally conservative agency heads, and more often than not, at the end of a year, we're reverting $10 to $20 million of unused funds because most agencies are managing their budgets wisely, prudently, and returning those dollars at the end of the year. Why that's important is we're under a surplus eliminator, so every dollar that agencies return at the end of the year goes out to the taxpayers in the form of property tax relief. So there's examples of it happening, voc rehab, Medicaid, previous lieutenant governor, but it tends to be the exception, thankfully not the norm. And the norm is agencies returning money at the end of the year.
How did this go on for so long without getting caught?
I think that's why the governor requested the audit. We've seen enough of these where you don't want to prejudge until you have all of the facts on the table. So I would stop short of speculating. Let's get all the facts on the table, and then let's diagnose the problem and apply the appropriate solution.
Understanding that we're still waiting for the results of that yet-to-be-started audit, is there a plan to make sure that this doesn't happen again, either in vocational rehab or in any other division?
Yeah, certainly the attention that this has brought has catalyzed quite a bit of conversations across the executive branch. So it has served as a very useful discussion point with agency fiscal officers across state government.
Briefly, the governor also expressed concern in early April that one of the bills that he signed about the legislature needing to approve future Medicaid waivers would affect whether or not the state could pay bills and other pending invoices that had to do with current Medicaid waivers and those clients and service providers. Has the state received any guidance from the Attorney General as to whether you can, in fact, pay those current invoices?
So my understanding is the department was sending a letter this week to the Attorney General's office with some very specific questions. The legislature has tried to make what their intent was clear, and the department is trying to square that with the plain text of the bill. So a series of questions went to the Attorney General's office, and hopefully that will help illuminate the path forward. I think one of the things that the governor has made clear is that the things that he put in that letter about the behavioral health plan, payments for skilled nursing facilities, and all of the other things that are important to Idahoans and the health and the safety of Idahoans, we will find a path forward. And what that path forward looks like will depend in part upon the specific answers that come back from the Attorney General's office.
Those issues were, of course, unexpected, but when you look at the legislative session as a whole, how is the governor's office feeling about the appropriations the legislature ended up approving?
Yeah, so the governor did a little bit of a tour this week talking about what the legislative session meant. And in January, he called for over $1 billion in school facility funding. He got $1.5 billion of school facility funding. He asked to fully fund launch. We got $75 million for launch so that 10,000 kids can go on to post-secondary opportunities. He asked for $200 million for bridges. Legislature appropriated $200 million for bridges. Structurally balanced budget, conservative growth 1.7%, maxed out rainy day funds, money for parks, money for water infrastructure. A lot to like in what happened this legislative session.
Was there anything that you wish the legislature had done but they didn't do?
I think there were probably the biggest thing. Governor had requested money to double funding for school counselors, taking it from $9 million up to $18 million. That would have helped with a lot of the behavioral health and counseling issues that we have with our youth. And then simultaneously, schools could have used it in a manner to augment post-secondary career counseling and some of those things now that we have Idaho launched. So that is one that didn't happen this year, but certainly will be on the radar screen for future legislative sessions.
This was also the first legislative session where state agencies and the legislature went through its new budgeting process through the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee. From your perspective, how did that new budgeting process go?
Sure. It was a new process. I mean, shorter presentations, agencies rather than doing long form presentations pivoted to Q&A, and budgets were set more frequently throughout session rather than all at the end. So, I mean, it was a pretty substantial change. Our approach all session was the legislature sets the process, we'll work within the process. Hard to argue with the outcomes. I mean, funding for facilities, funding for launch, funding for roads and bridges, funding for parks. So process will always be determined by the legislature, but in terms of the outcomes, I know we were very happy with how things wrapped up this session.
Right. Alex Adams, Administrator for the Division of Financial Management. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
On Wednesday, the state of Idaho had its day before the U.S. Supreme Court for oral arguments in Idaho v. United States on whether Idaho has the right to set an abortion ban that may conflict with the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, or EMTALA. EMTALA is a federal law that applies to hospitals that accept Medicare and mandates that those facilities must provide treatment to stabilize patients in emergencies. The United States argues that sometimes those treatments could include abortions. The state of Idaho, represented in court by Solicitor General Joshua Turner, argues that the state's abortion ban does not conflict with EMTALA, as it allows physicians to perform abortions when the patient's life is in danger, and that there's no requirement that death must be imminent. In other words, the law allows doctors to make good faith judgments that ending a pregnancy is necessary in certain narrow emergencies. But Idaho doctors say they are still concerned that the law's language is too subjective and doesn't offer them enough protections. In January, the court lifted a lower court stay on the law, allowing Idaho to fully enforce it. Since then, St. Luke's says they have had to airlift 6 pregnant patients for out-of-state emergency treatment compared to just 1 last year, according to Kelsey Mosley Morris of State's Newsroom. We have a rundown of Wednesday's oral arguments on our website at idahoreports.org. Senate Minority Leader Melissa Wintrow and House Minority Leader Ilana Rubel were among the Idahoans who traveled to D.C. for those oral arguments. On Friday, Senator Wintrow joined me to discuss her take. Thank you for joining us today. How do you think Wednesday's oral arguments went?
Well, I think it was pretty telling when we heard the female justices questioning the attorney, Mr. Turner, about some of the ambiguity even he was admitting to in the case. And I thought it was very promising that Coney Barrett even said, hey, you're hedging, aren't you? When they were talking about a serious pregnancy concern in a crisis where a woman's water broke. And Sotomayor asked, would this example count for you? And he hedged on it, and they called him on it. And I think that's a real big problem with Idaho's law, that people like the Attorney General continue to dismiss. The physicians have been saying over 2 years that the law is vague and unclear. They're afraid to practice medicine. They're afraid for their patients' lives. And now we see, you know, since EMTALA was, you know, the decision in January in the Supreme Court said EMTALA is pushed aside, we've had 6 women airlifted out of state.
And for those who didn't listen to Wednesday's oral arguments, Justice Sotomayor was talking specifically about when a woman's water breaks, when membranes rupture, when the fetus isn't viable. We're talking, you know, at 15, right. 16 weeks, when the standard of care isn't to deliver right. a live baby or a premature baby.
Exactly. And I think that's the real shocking thing, is that we're fighting over women's lives and their health and their permanent health. And in that case, that woman had to get a hysterectomy because of the condition that she suffered from. And I think it is, again, it's incredulous that we're here where our politicians are fighting against women's health on the national stage.
One of the things that you and your colleagues have brought up as a result of this abortion ban, Idaho has lost 1/4 of its OBGYNs. Idaho already had physician staffing shortages, especially in rural areas, and already has multiple counties that haven't had an OBGYN. Walk me through how the abortion ban contributed to the current situation.
Well, all you have to do is listen to the doctors and read the paper on a weekly basis, maybe even daily basis, right? And losing all those physicians, it's impacting the entire healthcare system. So if we're advocating for women to get prenatal care and go visit their doctor early to reduce complications and make sure she's healthy, with a shortage of doctors, we're having a problem there. So we're in a vicious cycle. We can't recruit people here because of fear of being criminalized and having their license suspended. And in that shortage, now you have so many more people competing for just basic healthcare appointments with their physicians. I think, you know, it's a hole that the legislature's dug in that we are not going to dig out of for decades, quite frankly.
In oral arguments on Wednesday, Joshua Turner, who argued the case for the state of Idaho, said that there is no imminency clause in Idaho's abortion ban and the exception for life of the mother. In other words, if there is a chance that the mother might die, and if the doctor ends a pregnancy in emergency circumstances in good faith, then they would not face charges, that the law in Idaho and EMTALA do not actually conflict. So why then are physicians still flying patients out of state when they face these emergencies?
Well, I think the physicians have been clear that the language that we use in statute are not medical terms, and this good faith effort is not something that's really clear and clarified for them. And so the easiest way to clear this all up is the Idaho legislature, for the last two sessions, has not done what the doctors and the people of Idaho have asked to do. Clear it up then. If this really is about providing a health exception, then make the language clear and we wouldn't have this fight. But I think it's pretty clear when you have the bill sponsor initially twice now on record being indicating when he was questioned whose life is more important. And both times he said the life of the fetus is more important than the life of the mother. So when you have this political context and this backdrop, physicians need real clarity, not, you know, a wink and a prayer that we won't prosecute you. That is not enough for these physicians, and we see it clearly. Again, easy answer, clear it up.
If the court does decide that it agrees with the state of Idaho and the Attorney General, how do you convince your Republican colleagues that the language and the Attorney General saying there's no conflict here, how do you convince them that that's not enough if they haven't done it for the last two sessions?
Well, I think the people of Idaho are going to do what the legislature refuses to do, and they have shown their success in the past, especially with Medicaid expansion and getting teacher raises. And we saw the recent group announce that there is the beginnings of a ballot initiative process going forward. And we saw in the Idaho Statesman poll in 2022, 86% or is 85% of the people that were polled agree there should be a health exception. 88% said they agree there should be a life exception. So I think the polls are really clear on what Idahoans believe and what they'll do at the polls. And the politicians better start listening because this is a serious issue.
Do you have any prediction on what the court will decide?
You know, I don't feel confident because of the ruling that they made in January to lift EMTALA and to then put us in the crisis that we're in.
To lift the stay that
correct.
Was in place at the time
right.
from Judge
yes.
Windmill.
Yeah, so that we were able to treat women in a crisis pregnancy and preserve her health until January, and that's what's caused this airlift situation in people in a greater crisis. But I think in 2022, when we saw highly politicized justices and court overturn Roe, after 50 years of precedent, I don't have a lot of faith or confidence. I'm holding out a little hope on the female justices' questions and their questioning of the attorney, but, you know, I don't have a real prediction. I'm a little doubtful, but I'm hopeful.
Senate Minority Leader Melissa Wintrow, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And here to share his perspective is Attorney General Raul Labrador. General Labrador, thanks for joining us. How do you think oral arguments went?
I think it went really well. I think Josh Turner, who's the attorney for the state who made the oral arguments, did a really good job. I think he found himself really being grilled, especially by the liberal justices, and they had some really tough questions, but I think he was able to withstand the questions that they asked. And I actually think the U.S. government did a good job. The solicitor, who is a Boise native and a graduate of Boise High, she did a good job. I disagree with her argument, but I thought she did a great job representing her position.
You mentioned the liberal justices. I know that Justice Amy Coney Barrett also sounded a little bit skeptical about some of the arguments from the state of Idaho.
I think she was not skeptical about the arguments. She was trying to clarify the arguments, because in our briefs, we made it clear that every single example that the DOJ had brought forth about examples where women would be in jeopardy and they would not have access to an abortion, that our experts have said, and we think it's clear that they would have access to an abortion. I think that's what she was trying to clarify. So I don't think she was skeptical about the argument. She was just trying to get him to clarify that.
I wanted to expand on that a little bit, because you said in briefs and mm-hmm. it came up in oral arguments and in a press conference after the hearing that you had a hard time believing that these physicians wouldn't have protections, that they would in fact be protected under Idaho's existing law, and that airlifting patients out of state for those emergency complications was unnecessary to protect their health or life. Can you expand on your skepticism there?
Yeah, so let's talk first about the protections, and then I'll talk about the airlifting. So the protections, the law in Idaho is really clear. It says that if a doctor has a good faith subjective belief that a woman's life is in jeopardy, that they can perform an abortion. And as I was stated in our briefs and stated in the argument, there's no immediacy requirement. It doesn't mean that the woman's about to die. It's just that not performing the abortion could lead to her death. And it could be a month from now, 2 months from now, or something. Doctors have that protection in the law. The Supreme Court of the state of Idaho made that clear, that there was no immediacy requirement. So I think it's irresponsible for people that are going out there telling doctors that they should be worried about not making good medical judgments, because if they make a good faith medical judgment that this woman's life is in jeopardy, our law allows them to perform the abortion. And not only that, I don't see a single jury in the state of Idaho that would convict a doctor who really had a good faith belief and that an abortion was necessary.
Do you think that the physicians are getting bad legal advice, or do you think that they're lying?
I don't think they're lying. I think they're getting bad information and they're confused. I'll give you an example. So I was talking to one of my attorneys just yesterday in our office, and he sat down with a group of doctors who were asking these questions about, well, explain to us what the law actually says, not what the media and the people out there are saying. And when he went step by step explaining the subjective standard, the good faith belief, one of the doctors just looked at him and said, oh, that's easy. Those are the decisions I have to make every day, those life and death decisions that I have to make every day. I can follow this law. So I think when they understand what the law says and when you give them the right information, it's the same type of judgment that they have to make every day in their practice.
So let's assume that they are getting bad advice, mm-hmm. that they would in fact be protected. We've mm-hmm. heard from Idahoans and doctors who say that this still sounds like kind of this big game of chicken, you know, that we're right, no, we're right, and the only people who are losing really are pregnant patients who aren't sure when or where they'll be able to get care if they have severe complications. So if they aren't going to face charges anyway, why not just clarify the law like the physicians are saying, if it wouldn't actually change anything in the emergency rooms and
because
in the courtroom?
This is where I think it is a game, because what they're doing on purpose is trying to provide misinformation, so we have a need to clarify the law, because what they want is a standard that is much broader. They want something, you know, where I remember last year they were talking about any kind of mental illness or anything that was short of life-threatening, and any moment that you expand the law, then that just drives a truck right through the law, and then abortions are going to be once again available in all circumstances in the state of Idaho. And our state legislature has decided that Idaho has three specific exceptions: rape, incest, and the life of the mother, and that's what the people of Idaho want. So I think any expansion on that would actually make it more difficult for us to to keep babies safe, which is what the legislature wants to do.
You mentioned earlier that you think no jury would convict, no jury would agree with charges if those specific examples were met. Can you guarantee, though, that no prosecutor in Idaho, no sheriff in Idaho, now or in the future, would pursue charges against a doctor who made those good faith judgments that an abortion would be necessary in one of those emergencies?
Well, I can't speak for every sheriff or prosecutor in Idaho, but the reality is that no prosecutor or sheriff is salivating at prosecuting doctors. This is a very difficult decision to make. What they're making sure is that the law is being followed and that somebody is not getting around the law or doing something that is clearly against the law. But I think when it's these close calls, I think it's going to be very difficult for a prosecutor or a sheriff to do that.
You said that the legislature has decided that this is what the policy of the state of Idaho mm-hmm. would be. And when you joined mm-hmm. us in December, you declined to say whether or not you would have advised the legislature to write that law a little bit differently to make mm-hmm. it more ironclad in mm-hmm. court, because you didn't want that to be used against mm-hmm. you. But now that oral arguments are behind you, would you advise the legislature to craft that law a little bit differently?
So this case is still pending, so I'm not going to make comments on that. What I can tell you is that I do approve of the changes that were made by the legislature. I think it was last year. I think those clarified a little bit. I was grateful by the Supreme Court decision that clarified, for example, the issue of ectopic pregnancies. The legislature never even included ectopic pregnancies because no one in Idaho ever thought that that would be considered an abortion.
Right.
And then people in the medical community start saying that, oh, we're going to get prosecuted for that. And we were like, no, we never thought of that as being something that should be prosecuted. And that leads to the issue of the AIRVAX, right? You know, you asked me about that just a little bit earlier. I have talked to doctors and administrators who say that they don't understand where these evacuations are coming from, because in the ER, this is not happening. These are supposed to be emergency situations. And you know how we refer to AIRVACs. They're life flights. So if a situation is so severe that it requires moving a woman out of the state of Idaho to another facility because their life is in jeopardy, our law already allows abortions to happen. So I'm trying to understand where this is coming from, because when I have talked to the people on the ground, the actual doctors that are in the ER, they're saying that they have not seen any situations like that.
Have you spoken to doctors at St. Luke's, which is the facility that made that claim? And they're saying that they don't know of any situations where this has happened.
Correct.
Do you think the administrator then is lying?
The only question that I have is, as I've spoken to the doctors at St. Luke's, they have said that in the ER, they only see women up to 20 weeks. That after 20 weeks, it goes to labor and delivery. I reached out to doctors in the labor and the delivery unit, and they wouldn't talk to me. So I don't know if there's something there. But if you listen to the arguments, so just remember, we have to go by what they said under oath and what they said in the oral arguments. In the oral arguments, the Department of Justice said that all these situations happen pre-20 weeks. So I'm having a hard time understanding how the DOJ is claiming that all these situations happen before the 20th week, but the doctors that I'm talking to are saying that that's not happening in the DR, and it could be happening in labor and delivery.
We have about 20 seconds left. How do you think the court will rule?
I can't tell. You know, it's hard to read the tea leaves. I think we did a really good job, and I hope that the Supreme Court rules for the state of Idaho.
All right. Attorney General Raul Labrador, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for watching. We'll see you right here next week.
Presentation of Idaho Reports on Idaho Public Television is made possible through the generous support of the Laura Moore Cunningham Foundation, committed to fulfilling the Moore and Bettis family legacy of building the great state of Idaho, by the Friends of Idaho Public Television, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.